Thank you. Okay. I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District for Wednesday, February 15, 2017. May we have a roll call, please?
Chairman Schultz?
Here.
Director Hill?
Here.
Director White?
Here.
Thank you. Would you all stand with us for the Pledge of Allegiance tonight?
Just place your hands over your heart and follow me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
At this time, we're going to review the agenda as presented by staff and see if there's anyone who wants to make any changes to the agenda. Do any board members want to change the order of the agenda?
I don't have anything tonight.
Okay. No. So then we will proceed with the agenda as presented. Let's go to public comments. This is an opportunity for any member of the community to address the board on any item within the jurisdiction of this board for a period not to exceed 3 minutes. Please keep your comments to items that are not on the agenda, because as we get to those items that are actually on the agenda, I will give you time to speak then as well. So is there anyone that would like to comment during public comment? Please come forward, state your name for the record.
Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker, and I kind of wanted to talk about the recycled water study that you guys had presented before your board about 6 weeks ago or so. What happened after it was here were letters sent to Oceano, Grover, Arroyo. Your councils all considered them, and in Oceano's case, they did not send the same letter back. You guys each massaged the letter back. These are letters to PISMO. I'm wondering where that commitment is for the sanitation district. The letter suggests that the original draft suggests that the sanitation district would have some cost involved and some participation in the cost. And I think both at Grover and Arroyo, you kind of work that language away. But when is the sanitation district going to talk about it? Because you are the key. You're the key to the whole puzzle, to the whole plan, as far as you have the most wastewater that could be recycled. So something was said at last night's Arroyo Grande meeting about perhaps whatever's going on at the sanitation district may put the recycled water project in jeopardy. I don't know if you heard that or have heard similar rumblings from council members in Pismo Beach. But, you know, Pismo Beach is in the driver's seat of this project. I don't think they want to play ball with you guys anyway. And if they can just say that you're too difficult, then they'll just go build their own recycled water plant. They'll inject it into your aquifer down here in Grover Beach, maybe some in Oceano, but they're the big boys. And so unless they can get money out of you, I don't think they have any interest in really in you. So I really want to see a more, I don't know, heart-to-heart conversation. One time we talked about having all board members from all communities at a regional meeting. So, you know, 20 elected officials in the room. Let's do it. Let's hash it out. Let's see what it looks like. And I'm of the opinion that whatever comes this way, that it includes a new wastewater treatment facility for the sanitation district outside of the sea level rise area, and that because your facility is old, and that we, you know, eliminate those risks. So, you know, recycled water, away from the coast.
Thank you, Julie. Is there anyone else?
Good evening. Brad Snook, co-chair of our county's chapter of Surfrider Foundation. I want to follow along on what Julie Tacker was stating about the reclaimed water and also getting all the stakeholders into the room to come to one precise decision on the path forward. It's critical thinking because what it does is it allows everybody to communicate and receive the same message at the same time. I've been asking the councils, the cities, the municipalities that are involved in the NCMA, the Northern Cities Management Area, that does annual reports on how much water we have and how much water is consumed. This is like the expertise. Everybody shares equally on those numbers. Right now, it's kind of because each one of the cities or municipalities receives the message about what's going on in the NCMA meetings on a monthly or every other month basis. They each receive those reports individually, and there should be a standardized report coming out of the NCMA so that each one of the cities, each one of the entities that show up to that big meeting has the same information that they're going on, okay? There are no surprises that way. That is the best way to run an organization, is to have the open channels and the communication. We're looking for standardized reports coming out of the NCMA because, as you know, some of the greatest swindles in California history had to do with water, okay? So we don't want any more swindles in this county. And open communications will help to evolve and streamline the process. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else?
Hello to the board. Shirley Gibson, Halcyon. So last night, Arroyo Grande City Council took the motion to hire a third party to look in into allegations of a violation of the Brown Act, and one of their options was to perhaps partner with the sanitation district in that investigation. And Arroyo had a closed session to discuss that they were that the city had significant exposure to litigation regarding an alleged violation of the Brown Act. So I'm thinking that the sanitation district might be likewise have exposure to litigation. So I would recommend that you partner with Arroyo on that investigation. Thank you very much.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else?
Ron Holt. I will be brief, but I just want to bring up something once again that I brought up before a couple times at least, and that is, I know it's a difficult process, but the board needs to be more than three people. We need to have five people up here to get to deal with a lot of situations, whether it's people on vacation or various other things, but it's just not a good situation when you only have three people and something happens. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, let me close public comment and bring it back to the board. We're going to move to our consent agenda. And this is item 5. And on the consent agenda, we have 5A, approval of warrants, 5B, financial review at January 30, 2017, and plant superintendent report. Do any members of the board want to pull any items from consent?
No. 5C.
Okay, we're going to 5C. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll take 5C separately. Okay. So at that point, we're going to move forward to 5A and 5B. Do any members of the community want to comment on consent agenda? And this is 5A and 5B only.
Just 5A, I'm disgusted to see the legal bills again over $10,000, and I'd like you all to get a handle on it. This is your regular counsel. This is before any special counsel. I'm sure their invoices will be in back in front of us in 2 weeks. Get out of the litigation business.
Is there anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close to bring it back to the board and see if someone's prepared to make a motion on items 5A and 5B.
I'll move approval of items 5A and 5B.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, we'll do a roll call.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Okay, let's move on to item 5C. This is a plant superintendent report. Mr. Huebner.
This is our regular report that is put together by our plant superintendent. You can see the plant numbers in terms of the performance of the plant. We have our regular operation and maintenance projects listed by bullets. Staff participated in a number of training that are listed as well. And we had a number of call-outs as listed in the superintendent report. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, specifically with Director Hill, if you have something. And our plant superintendent is here in the audience if there's something particular.
Okay.
John, I have a question.
Okay. Okay.
I just noticed that there was a looks like almost like a continuing pattern from January through February 7th of the digester sump having problems that they were calling out operations on. Just looks like resetting alarms, but it looks like there must have been some challenge that January 31st, February 1st, February 2nd, February 7th. It just caught my eye.
Hmm. Okay.
Yep.
John.
Why don't you come up, John?
Good evening, board. Chairman Schultz and Board of Directors. With regard to what Director White has brought up, with the influent wet well, or actually digester sump alarm, that was a very astute catch, too, by the way. It was great. But we've had a problem with the digester clogging, and I'll back up. About 6 weeks ago, we had our auger. We had one of our augers go out. And when our augers, what they do, their purpose is to screen the strings, plastic, anything that comes into the plant. It usually pulls that out, dumps it in the dumpster, and the water passes through. But we had one fail, so we had to use our backup system, which is a mechanical bar screen, which isn't nearly as efficient. As a result, we had a lot of those items that were passing through our regular process and getting into our digester. As a result, the digester, the way our digester works, as much as you sludge as you pump in, the rest of it travels out through the top. It supernates through the top. And so a lot of the particles that were normally removed, or the debris that was normally removed at the headworks, wasn't being removed, but it would make it to the digester and clog those areas. And so what would happen is those areas would clog all night, where typically the sludge flows from one digester to another. Mm-hmm. Well, what would happen is instead of it flowing, all that debris would get caught up in the tube that it exits the digester on. And then it, in the middle of the night, all of a sudden, it would build up enough pressure, push out, fill up a sump, and then we'd get an alarm, and our operators would have to respond every time, like you said. And this is only a partial picture. There was a few other times that aren't in this time frame. We've solved that. We finally, eventually, we went through a lot of things, but in the end, we basically turned off the digester mixing system for a while, allowed all the solids that were suspended because of the motion of the digester mixer. We allowed those things to settle to the bottom, which is not the greatest solution, but it works for now. We're planning a digester cleaning. But all the debris that was floating around and being and causing the clog had an opportunity to settle over a period of about 7 hours. And since we've done that, it's been at the end of last week, we haven't had any more of these alarms, so all that to say.
Good.
Okay, and while I'm up here, I'd also like to say that we are having a, we posted in the paper, we noted it's noticed it in the paper, but there's a yard, a surplus sale tomorrow at the Sand District. Some old computers, a couple of old laptops, and some other things like that that you might find at a typical municipality sale will be available. And I believe OCSD, Oceano Community Service District, is having a surplus sale tomorrow, too, beginning at 9 a.m. At the Sanitation District, if it rains, we'll hold it inside. We have an area inside where we can hold it. So if anybody's interested in picking up any extra thing that you might find at a municipality, come by. We even have a truck for sale. So I just wanted to get that out, too.
Thank you, John. Jim, did you? What did you have, Jim?
I just am used to seeing the superintendent's report be presented by Mr. Clemens, which I think is a service to the public who may be watching on the video and so forth, and was just wondering why it was listed as a consent agenda item this time. But I also wanted to congratulate the plant staff on the good effluent numbers there, and good job.
Great. Thank you.
I can provide an explanation.
Yeah, Mr. Huber.
You'll notice there's no district administrator report. We did this purposely because in the intervening time that we do the agenda prep and the staff report, whether there's enough information to present and use up. But you see we have a full agenda today, so it was a really no more than utilizing the time on the agenda, and so that's why we did that.
Thank you for that. Let me open this up to the public. Is there any member of the community that would like to address this item?
Julie Tacker, and I too was surprised to see the superintendent's report in the Cliff Note version. I look forward to Mr. Clemens' reports. Mr. Huebner's reports are also informative, and that one's not here. I would hope that you would ask that this not become a practice and that we continue with the every 2 weeks the way it was. One thing that, and this is my third meeting in a row bringing it up, is the video of the FFR backup. I would like to see that presented to the board. I think you would all find it interesting. You have yet to see it, but, you know, I'm going to get popcorn and sodas, and we should watch the movie because I think we all need to understand when and if that machine fails, what is the plan and how is it going to work.
Is there anyone else? Seeing no one come forward and close this to the public, this is a receive and file item, so we're going to move on. Let's move to our action items tonight. We have item 6A, 6B, and 6C. So legal counsel, do we need to take these separately? And seeing that we have an alternate here tonight, I wanted to just make sure regarding Board Member White's, if she has the ability to vote on minutes tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening, board members. I would recommend that you take them separately because Ms. White would have to acknowledge for each minute, if she's going to vote to approve them, that she has watched the video of each of those meetings.
Okay. Okay, very good. So then we'll take item 6A. This is approval of minutes for the meeting of December 21st, 2016. Staff, any reports on this?
So, as you know, this issue came up at the last board meeting in terms of whether we attach letters to a particular minutes. We've done more research looking at what other agencies do attach it to the minutes. My research showed that none of our member agencies, whether it's the City of Aurora Grande, Grover Beach, Oceano CSD, the county, or City of Ventura, where I'm familiar with, does this practice. It's common practice is to attach them by reference. So I want to add that as information for you today when you consider this and all of these minutes.
Okay, very good. Any questions of staff? Let me open this up to the public, so if anyone in the community wants to address this item.
Julie Tacker, and I'm only going to speak one time to all 3 minutes because I'm not going to go through each one. Mr. Huebner's explanation is fine about attaching minutes as a practice, but when directed to do so, which your board did, then there should be no question that they just simply be attached to the minutes. That's what your board did. So what's not attached is the article that was also included in your board action to have attached to the minutes. So the article that Mr. Arnoldson submitted for the record, and I believe he even used those words, for the record, that it was a opinion piece that I wrote that was published on Calcoast News. I stand by my opinion. That's my opinion. And he felt that you needed to read it, and he asked that it be part of the record. So your board gave the direction to include it in the minutes as part of the record, and there's still that article is still not here.
Is there anyone else?
Yes, I noticed that there were several letters that were attached that we asked be attached. You asked be attached. And I read them, and it says that they would like to have them read into the record. And I was wondering if I could go ahead and read them into the record.
Not tonight. These are just minutes from what occurred on that day.
So just making a note, there are two letters in the minutes that can be read by the public if they choose to read them.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good evening, Mary Lucy Oceano. The letter that I had submitted, I had requested to be on the agenda with a set amount of time. The letters that are being asked to be included are only attacks that were solicited against me and have absolutely nothing, no relevance whatsoever to the topic that I discussed. So if you could explain that, how you could justify attaching letters that had nothing to do with the topic that was being discussed. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Shirley Gibson Halcyon. I would recommend that you just reference the letters and they be filed and not. I think this is being overthought and it's a waste of time to spend this much about letters that everyone's aware of. Thank you.
Very good. Is there anyone else?
Ron Arnoldson, Grover Beach. I think if you're going to put minutes out, you should be accurate. They should be pretty much what the meeting was about. And if there are letters that are submitted, they should be put into the record. And that should be part of the public record also. So if you're going to put minutes out, make them accurate. If you're not, don't even have minutes. Why waste our time?
Is there anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the board. Discussion? No? Okay. Well, let me just take the lead on this then. Legal counsel, is there anything? I mean, obviously, the letters, whether they are attached to these minutes or not, they are available to the public. Is that my understanding?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, they are public records.
Okay, and then by making reference in the minutes, I think, is that including them into the record as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I might comment on that.
Yes.
I think one of the issues was that these letters were submitted in advance of the meeting and were not included on the meeting agenda, as another letter was included. So I think that was an attempt to make sure that everyone had submitted something for consideration at that meeting got effectively equal treatment. So with that, I'm prepared to recommend approval of the minutes of December 21st as presented in the staff report.
So let me make sure I'm sure, staff, I see you have copies of the letters, but I don't see any direct, I guess they are mentioned here, but they are not in, are they just included for information?
So what we've done, previously we had included them by reference. This go around, we not only include them by reference, but also included the actual letters that were submitted.
Okay. Karen, what do you mean?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I'm happy to vote, but I do not think, I read the minutes, I do not think I saw this the December 21st meeting on TV. If I do, I don't remember it enough. But in general terms, I would object to, the minutes are supposed to be a record of the action of the board. It's not what happens in the audience. It's what the board does. And I think the bylaws that we're looking at tonight kind of make that pretty clear, because I read that afterward. Okay. That's if you refer to 6G, attachment number 1, page 7, it may be a little ambiguous.
Okay. But so, I'm sorry.
So, I don't know whether I'm supposed to vote or not. I did read it all.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe Director White stated that she did not recall if she saw the December minutes on the video. So if that's the case, I would recommend that she abstain from this vote.
Okay. Sorry.
So, Jim, I just want to make sure I'm clear on your motion. Is your motion to include these letters as attachments, or and we reference them?
Well, it appears that they're attachments to the minutes, unless I'm misunderstanding it.
So I'm not going to support this motion. I'm going to, I think we're going to have to table this. I will say that I was the one who said if there was direction to include them, we should. However, in light of the information that's been brought forward, and I've talked to other folks with respect to what is the common practice, I think the fact that if the minutes reference all of the letters and they are available through a Public Records Act request or they are available to the public, then I think it makes sense. We don't want to set a dangerous precedent. So, yes, I will take responsibility. But I think going forward, we need to make these cleaner. So at this point, I don't know a way other than to table this until we Ms. White has a chance to review the minutes, or if we get the regular OCSD member back. So. So that motion dies from lack of a second. I don't know if there's anyone wants to. And Karen, you're not comfortable. Jim, are you okay if we table this until the next meeting?
Yes.
Okay. So then we're going to do approval of minutes of the meeting of January 4th, 2017. Any comments, any changes on these minutes?
No, I don't think so. I saw that one.
Oh, you're okay, good. Okay. Anyone from the community that wants to speak on these minutes? Seeing no one come forward, let me bring it back. And someone prepared to make a motion on these minutes.
Move approval of the minutes of January 4th.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. All right, let's move on to minutes for the meeting of February 1st, 2017. Anyone want to modify or change these minutes? Okay, seeing none. Anyone from the community want to speak on these minutes? Seeing no one come forward, we'll accept a motion on this item as well.
Move to approve the minutes of February 1.
Second, saw the meeting.
Okay, there's a motion, there's a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Let's move on to item 6D. This is a calendar year 2016 annual report to Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. Mr. Huebner.
So I will be doing the presentation. Typically, I like to go to the podium, address the board, but since I'm going to be advancing the slides, I think I'll try it from a sitting standpoint, at least for the first one. So this is a good news report. I believe that hopefully you'll agree with me. Each year, and let me just jump into it, this is item 6D. This is our calendar year 2016 annual report to the Central Regional Water Quality Control Board. So a little bit of background. Each year, the district is required to submit an annual report to the regional board, the Central Coast, in this regard. It's required under our National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit. So that's a federal permit issued under the Clean Water Act, and it's issued by the district by the regional board. The last permit, or the permit that we're operating under, was last reissued in 2009. And it's currently under administrative extension. So I've mentioned this in the past. We've submitted a report of waste discharge or an application again for renewal. We're waiting for the regional board to do that renewal process. As part of that permit, we have an annual report that's due to the regional board by February of each year. So this year, district staff prepared and submitted an executive summary. We've attached that with our regular annual report, and we include that as part of the staff report that you see. The executive summary provides some highlights and updates on the district's projects and programs the past calendar year, including some of the projects that were both initiated and completed, an accounting of our wastewater flows, some key performance indicators, where we've had effluent or permit violations we've indicated, and perhaps even some corrective actions that we've undertaken, collection systems, if there's something to report, some personnel, and then the administration and permit compliance. So you'll see actually quite a bit of information that was added not only to the annual report, because now we have quite a few things to report in our administration side, fiscal and that sort. We took quite a bit of effort to highlight those and include those. So the annual report, in addition to the executive summary, has, of course, our water quality monitoring data, our effluent and receiving water. Some have been reported to you on a regular basis. The receiving water, you received that as a separate report earlier last year, I believe, if I remember the date. The annual report also has our compliance record. It lists all our operators and the levels of certification, anything changed with our operation and maintenance manual, our pretreatment program, our lab certification, biosolids, and then brine waste or brine disposal program is probably a better way to describe it. So we believe this addition of this executive summary provides both the board, the regulators, and the public with a more comprehensive view of a variety of things that they may not have been aware of that the district works on, some of the projects, programs, and accomplishments. So we should definitely take credit for it and wanted to highlight. So with that, look forward to receiving your feedback and input on this executive summary to better us or prepare us for next year's annual report and executive summary. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that staff report. Any questions of staff? Jim?
Some comments. First of all, on page one, where first bullet, secondary process improvements redundancy project, it says CEQA MDN. I believe that should say CEQA MND. Second page, permit effluent violations. The first sentence, in May 2016, a TSS average monthly value of 44 milligrams per liter was reported, which exceeded the average monthly. And the sentence is incomplete. I believe that should be finished to say TSS effluent limitation of 40 milligrams per liter. And then in the following sentence, there's an extraneous effluent limitation before TSS.
Yes.
And if there's then the mention of a flow meter under collection systems to monitor inflow and infiltration within the collection system. And I would just, again, hope to have the discussion that we can improve our monitoring with the additional storms coming on so we can pinpoint where all of that influent is coming in. That's an extraneous comment, but since I saw the flow meter mentioned. Quarterly budget updates again reminds me about the mid-year budget. And then ongoing internal fiscal controls reviews. Review and made ongoing improvements to district's internal accounting and fiscal system, but I would like to know what those are. That's basically it.
Okay. Karen, you have anything?
No, I just thought it was a really pretty positive report. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the lack of challenges to that would have to be reported to the water folks.
Okay. Well, this was a direction, and thanks for putting together this executive summary. I think with those minor corrections, I think this certainly shows a lot of work has been done. Kudos to all the staff for working on this, and I think this definitely is something that would be a useful tool going forward. I think Member Hill had a question regarding the ongoing internal fiscal controls.
Certainly.
Can you respond to that?
Simple things such as adding project numbers and including those into our filing system. So when you look at the budget that was developed, we now have the ability to take a particular project. It has a way to now, when the invoices come in, by track it by project, even replacement by the schedules. That's one example. Just how we handle credit cards, little things of that sort, mm-hmm. And so forth. Those are a few that just come off the top of my mind.
Okay.
I would add that the typo, the missing sentence, we caught that earlier. This is this version of this executive summary is actually an older one. We caught it before we sent it to the regional board. So, but
very good. Let me open this up and see if there's anyone from the community that would like to address this item.
Julie Tacker, and I was thinking, did you already send this? And it sounds like you have. Maybe in the future it should come to the board first. And they could actually see what, or they could maybe help you amend it or adjust it to reflect maybe their thoughts on what's gone on. I'm particularly interested in the discussion surrounding the coastal development permit and the redundancy project. You know, maybe it's not specific, but you only awarded the contract to Kennedy Jenks for phase one of design, and like the grit removal is part of the coastal development permit. I don't know if you're communicating all that with the water board that there are amendments to the coastal development permit, and I talked about it 2 weeks ago. I was hoping that you guys had been included in what's been amended on that permit. The reference to the lab analyst, lab person of the year, reminds me about the commendation from the City of Arroyo Grande's mayor and how refreshing that was. And I think I asked if you're
if Grover Beach might do the same, if Oceano might do the same. I think this young woman is a leader, and she needs to be recognized, I think, by all of your agencies. And at the bottom of the page for administration, it says, established a district role as a leading voice for the South San Luis Obispo County So not the district, for the county, regarding future efforts for wastewater reclamation. What form is that in? How has the district become a leading voice for South San Luis Obispo County regarding efforts for wastewater reclamation? I'd like an explanation, because you're not in the reclamation business. So far, all you've done is gotten a grant and had a planning study done. That doesn't make you a leader. And so, as my public comment suggested earlier, I'd like to see you maybe become part of the team, not the leader, because you are a single source, single purpose agency, only treating wastewater, and that's all you do. So I wish this had more sunshine before it was sent to the water board.
Is there anyone else?
Mary Lucy Oceano, I'm sorry, I don't agree with all that hostility on a report. I wanted to thank you for keeping the report, you know, as bullet points. You put down a 200-page report on someone's desk, and they're just going to blow it off into the trash can. What I felt that was kind of lacking is some of the collaboration, and I want to thank Ms. Tacker for bringing that up, because I do know that there has been extensive talks on reclamation. I do know that there is bodies that sit together and discuss with Pismo and Arroyo Grande, you know, the Sand District. I do know that you're involved in the NCMA and some of the groundwater stuff. And so maybe just a quick paragraph on some of the collaborative efforts, I think, should be highlighted a little bit more. But thank you for the report.
Is there anyone else?
And I also want to agree with Mrs. White. I think it's a pretty nice report, and I think it bodes well for the people that work for our department, for our sanitation district, dealing with an aging plant and trying to keep it up and running. I think it bodes well for everybody down there, and congratulations to our lab analysis, and thank you, everyone.
Okay. Anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, I'm going to bring this back, and let's see. This is just a receive and file, so.
Yeah.
That is correct.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on.
May I request a copy of the full report as well?
Certainly. All the data, everything, the entire?
Sure.
Okay.
So let's move on to.
All right.
This is, I believe, item 6E. And this is the contract with Regional Government Services for Human Resources Professional Services. Mr. Huber, you have the floor.
Give me one moment, and I'll bring up the next presentation. There we go. Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members, members of the audience. This is item 6E. It's a proposed contract with Regional Government Services for Human Resources Professional Services. So for the past several months, background, district staff has been working towards soliciting proposals and negotiating a contract with the intent of replacing our current human resources consultant. Our current provider, Lara HR Services, is close to completing work on several projects, including a comprehensive overhaul of our personnel policy manual and job descriptions, draft employee-employer resolution, draft MOU, among other things. So currently under contract, completing some of those things, but as those projects finish, we obviously need the services of another human resource professional or consultant service. Towards that end, back in December, we sent out a request for qualifications, and that's provided to you as attachment number one. We did distribute that RFQ to a number of agencies and individuals throughout the state, within San Luis Obispo County, several human resource associations. We tried to do quite a bit of outreach, and I even personally delivered one to one in the city of San Luis Obispo. Several firms responded by formally declining. The rest did not respond at all. One firm did. That was Regional Government Services, who provided a written proposal to the district. So per their proposal, this is straight out, Regional Government Service is a joint powers authority established in 2001 to serve the needs of cities, counties, special districts, and other government entities throughout California. They do provide a broad range of human resource experience and support services, including general assistance, health benefits, policy and procedures, performance management, labor relations, which is a particular need that we require, training, recruitment and employment selection, risk management, and payroll review, among many services they provide. Since receiving their initial proposal, we did do a reference check. I did call two of the sanitation districts that were listed. One returned my call. I did have a discussion with them. We did also consult with our current HR provider for advice on the proposal and the services provided. And then we entered in a series of discussions on the scope of services. RGS also provides human resource professional service assistance, as I mentioned, to two sanitary districts in California. And so as we progressed through these discussions and found that they are appropriate, we feel appropriate to assist us with HR services. I had district council assist me in looking at the contract and agreement, and after several revisions, the contract agreement was mutually agreed to, and that's provided to you as attachment number two. We also wanted to not work necessarily in a vacuum in terms of some of the work plan items that either are currently underway or anticipated. So this was a list of tasks that we saw that we may be able to complete with their assistance this fiscal year, and then looking ahead to next fiscal year, some of the things that potentially we could be working on with our HR consultant. And so it gives you an idea of the kind of needs or services or specific projects, let's say, versus just general HR administration. So as a virtual government agency, RGS, they provide human resources through a network of geographically distributed advisors. I've spoken with Ms. Sophia, and I can't pronounce that last name. I won't try to do it here. You can see it on the slide, but she will be assigned as the lead advisor. They've also agreed to provide two key RG staff from their team to provide a continuing continuity of services and to ensure that certain project deliverables will be met. They'll also have other advisors regionally available. It depends on the needs. If it's specific needs for labor relations, they will provide that. If it's specific just HR in general, they provide those. The rates for their services range from $150 per hour for a senior advisor to $65 per hour for a project coordinator HR technician. Again, depends on the level of service, depends on the need, depends on the project. So today we are recommending the board consider and approve a contract with Regional Government Services to provide the district with future professional human resources services for ongoing and project-specific district needs. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that staff report. Let's see if there's any questions. Karen, you have any questions?
Not really, no.
Jim?
Would this include employee consultation? In other words, if an employee needs a human resources consultant or wishes to talk with a HR representative?
Yes.
so it would provide that service to the employees. Then just one thing I'm curious about on the contract 5.6, it says that the contractor will supply office space, and I'm curious how that works when they talk about scheduled on-site office visits.
We do not anticipate providing them any office space other than a place to meet, whether it's in private or having a meeting place, similar to what we have currently with the admin trailer. But there's certainly nothing anticipated providing them with a separate space on an ongoing basis of their own. So hopefully that answers your question. And if
the particular language that concerns us is RGS and not the district shall supply all tools, equipment, office space, and materials needed. Again, I just wonder how that works, and it would seem more reasonable to me that the district does, as Mr. Huebner suggested, provide a place to meet and so forth.
So you're specifically talking about if there's an employee consultation, right?
Or if they are working on a project at the district, do they not use, for example, a desk at the district office? This is they and not the district will supply the office space. So
I find that, okay. I also find the language a bit odd because.
Excuse me.
Hang on a sec. Legal counsel.
Mr. Chair, I think I could clarify that language for everyone. Because they are an independent contractor, and to comply with PERS rules, because many of the people that they retain are PERS retirees, there's a requirement that that they keep a very firm separation between district and independent consultant. Otherwise, it could be deemed an employee of the district. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but those are the PERS rules, and so those are that's language included in there at their request to make it very clear that they are an independent contractor.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Other questions, Jim?
So 1.7 says create policy implementation plans and timelines, including identification of roles/activities to be carried out by the district's managers and supervisors. Would seem to me that those should be established by the district rather than by a consultant. Similarly, with 1.9, design and coordinate payroll and benefits workloads or workflows with finance and department staff to ensure effective transactional operations. I would rather see an auditor or someone with financial experience rather than an HR organization take part in the financial organization of the district.
If I could clarify, those list of tasks are to give, they're not specifically what they will do, it's what they can do to give us flexibility, and those are the type of services, but they would only, we'd only avail ourselves of those services if we task them. There's supposed to be a broad list.
Okay. Then there's number three, again, brings up the office, providing office space, perform functions assigned by the lead advisor. Such employee may perform services at agency offices available, which would seem to be more logical than providing the office space themselves. And the 3.2 says perform related work as required as approved by the RGS lead advisor. So I'm just concerned about the potential that they would assign themselves work. I think that should be under the purview of the district administrator. But perhaps those are, you know, those issues can be worked out.
Yeah, I think once we get to a point of making a motion or further clarification of those items. Any other questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Gerhard, a few questions. I know you had made reference to Ms. Laura completing some projects here very soon, and then there's a discussion regarding not having human resource professional consultants. What's the timing of that? Can you provide further clarification?
Yeah, so we're marching forth with our update of our PPM. We hope to bring something for release in early March. And similarly with perhaps an employer relations, middle of March. Of course, some of this is subject to negotiations with the union. So we're looking at a sort of completing these projects in the next 60 to 90 days. That's my time frame for an outlook in terms of goals to get these things done. And in the interim, we'll start phasing in, hopefully, RGS, if you approve a contract, with some of the general service getting familiar with it, and so it'll be a gradual transition. Okay. Finishing the projects, bringing them in, and have a seamless transition.
Gotcha. And then the contract before us tonight is, looks like this is through the end of the fiscal year, and then at that point it would be month to month, is that?
Yeah, it's an ongoing consultant service contract similar to what we had in place before with Lara Services.
Okay. So this is on an as-needed basis. And
right.
They would just charge on the hourly rates
with
tasks assigned by the district administrator.
Correct.
Okay. And then I'm sure you probably have caught this, the date on the start date on the contract. I think it says January 23rd. Just.
Oh. Yeah, obviously that would need change.
Yeah. Okay, very good. All right, I had a comment. I'll hold that comment for later. Let me see if there's anyone. Let me open this up to the public. If there's anyone from the community that would like to address the item before the board.
Julie Tacker, and something you just said, Mr. Scholes, about the as-needed basis contract makes me curious. The district administrator entered into a contract with Liebert Cassidy Whitmore without ever bringing it to your board on an as-needed basis, and I don't know why he's doing this now, or he didn't do that then, to have a practice in place. So that just kind of is a question. The one of the concerns I have is that you only got one response. That tells me that maybe human resource professionals don't want to deal with a messy district, and your human relations are messy right now, as evidenced by a recent contract with the union, who has a human resource aspect to their work. Liebert Cassidy Whitmore, human resource aspect to their work. Stockton and Trujillo, the same. Mr. Huebner is supposed to carry some of those skills with him in his work. And I recall that Liebert Cassidy Whitmore recommended mediation in their last investigation. And I am unsure, but I believe that's human relations also. So I count six people handling human relations for a staff of 10. Something's not right. Something's really not right. With Mr. Huebner's list of possible tasks for this human relations, human resources consultant, I would ask that these tasks and these priorities be brought to your board, and that, you know, what do you want? I don't know where these came from. And perhaps they would have been addressed in a strategic planning session that was coming, but it seems to me premature to throw these priorities out there without having heard from your board as a whole on what your priorities are in your own strategic planning. So I don't see human resource contractors in small districts that I watch. Oceano doesn't have one. Los Osos doesn't have one. I don't know if Cambria has one. But I don't quite get it, why all these people are paid to manage the human part of the job at the sanitation district.
Julie, I need you to wrap up. Thank you.
I'm done.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Mary Lucia Shiano, I'm really sorry to see Alicia Laura go. I thought she was really good. In the Knudsen report, one of the number one priorities that he listed as a deficiency was the policies and procedures manuals for employees, which is normally typically created by an HR person. So to follow up on the Knudsen report, I think it's right on time getting this work done. And once again, I know that Alicia was doing a lot of this work, and that's a huge vacancy. The board is, I really caution you not to, to go too far down the micromanaging road. At some point you're going to have to trust management and step aside and be okay with briefings. But what I'd like to ask is, what's the difference between the fiscal difference between legal counsel doing HR services versus having a consultant firm doing HR services? And also, what protections are put in place where, so you have a disgruntled employee and they call up and they hang on the phone with your legal counsel at $250 an hour. And so what controls are put in place where you don't have somebody who gets on the phone and hangs out with the HR person at $75 an hour? So I just have those two questions. Thanks.
Okay. Anyone else? Let me close this to the public, bring it back to the board. And I don't know if you heard, if you or Gil want to try and answer. I know there was a good question regarding the fiscal difference between an HR person versus legal responding.
Well, it's a challenging question to answer because it can involve legal issues. It can involve legal issues that are very specialized. That's why we have LCW. You have, typically you'd like to handle it at the lowest level possible, myself, with experience that I have in consultation with your HR representative. So that's how you control costs, but sometimes there are issues that have to be to avoid liability and such forth, where you have to engage legal counsel and sometimes special counsel.
Okay. And maybe with respect to, I know we only, you got one response, but you did reach out to other firms. Can you maybe address that a little bit?
Oh, we absolutely did. Why the response was what it is, we can speculate, and I don't want to do that. It is what it is. We did do a broad outreach, and as I said, I actually personally went in and spoke to someone, and they did not respond. That being said, you do have a qualified, very good firm that did respond and is available and willing to assist us.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Any more discussion on this? And I will say, the Knudsen report was very specific about having HR and the policy procedures manual updated. So I think this is consistent with that report and moving forward. And, you know, obviously we're not going to speculate, but I think obviously you've reached out. It seems like we have a qualified firm. The rates appear to be fair. And I certainly think if we go for any prolonged period of time and not having someone doing HR, then we do expose this district to significant litigation. So I wanted to make those comments. I want to see if there's any other comments, if someone wants to make a motion on this item.
I generally agree with the comment, and that was a recommendation of the Knudsen report. And while I do have had voiced some concerns, which I still have, but I think that the district administrator can work through those as he's indicated. So I'm prepared to support this, and I'll move that we approve the contract with the typographical corrections that were noted for human resources professional services with RGS.
I'll second that.
Okay, very good. There's a motion and there's a second. Let's do roll call.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Very good. We're going to move on to item 6F. This is the proposed resolution number 2017-362 to allow the district employees to participate in CalPERS 457 deferred compensation plan. Mr. Huebner, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair Schultz, board members, members of the audience. Very good. This is item 6F, a proposed resolution number 2017-362 to allow the district's employees to participate in a CalPERS 457 deferred compensation plan. I have a brief presentation. I'll go through it very quickly. So the California Public Employees Deferred Compensation 457 plan, or CalPERS 457 plan, provides a deferred compensation program for public employees that elect to participate in that plan. The district currently nor historically has participated in any deferred compensation plan, whether it's a 457 or commonly in the private sector they have the 401k plan. Many public agencies have established 457s. I've availed myself and had the opportunity to do that at previous employers. And it provides additional means to assist employees to plan for their retirement beyond traditional pensions and or Social Security. Participation in this plan, if this was to be established by the district, would be strictly voluntary. It would allow an individual to automatically save a portion of their pre-tax salary. Employee would decide how much to contribute. The current limits are $18,000 a year, $24,000 for those that are over 50 years of age. And the amount would be deducted pre-tax from their employee's paycheck. That would allow the employee's taxable income to be reduced by the amount that they placed in the plan, likely lowering their overall tax. The contributions and earnings that they are provided through the plan would benefit from the power of tax-deferred compounding. Taxes on this income, investments, or earnings are deferred till withdrawals begin. So when they retire or they reach a certain age, usually it's 55 or 59, depending on the specific plan, that's when they could access the accounts except for certain hardship categories. We've also provided additional information as attachment went to the staff report, part of the brochure that we downloaded from the website. So some of the fiscal consideration, probably asking how does this affect the district's bottom line? There are no direct costs or expenses that will be incurred by the district for administering the CalPERS 457 plan. That's what CalPERS does through their vendor. Of course, we would acknowledge that our bookkeeper secretary would need to record and submit to CalPERS through our bi-monthly payroll any of the employees that participate. We do expect that effort to be relatively minor. The district would not be liable for any losses. The employee experiences choices made on the plan investment, so there's assistance that's provided. They make the choices if it does well, depending on the risk that they want to undertake. and all management and investment fees would be solely the responsibility of the employee. So in conclusion, today we are requesting the board consider district's participation in the CalPERS 457 Deferred Compensation Plan through adoption of three actions, adoption of resolution number 217-362. This is a model resolution that CalPERS provided and we modified. Authorize the district administrator to complete and submit the employer adoption agreement. That's attachment number three. And the new employer information sheet. Fill it out, and that's provided as attachment number four. So I just want to conclude that if you were to adopt this, certainly we would have additional information. We'd provide it to the district employees at a future date on how they would sign up, the benefits and investment choice available to them. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for the staff report. Any questions of staff? Then, Jim?
Is this being coordinated with any other OPB?
No. Okay. I think they're independent of each other in the sense that this wouldn't become a liability or wouldn't show up on our a future OPB report.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. No, I don't have any questions. Let me see if there's anyone from the community that has a question on this item. Seeing no one come forward, let me bring it back. And comment.
Ron Arnoldson, this is a no-brainer. This is great for any public entity to have, and it's great to retain your great thing to retain your employees. And I hope you move forward on it tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Arnoldson. Anyone else? Let me close it and bring it back to the board. And I would just say this is a positive thing for employees, and I can say in a former lifetime when I was a city employee with a couple of cities, I'm very familiar with the 457 Deferred Compensation Plan, and I think this is a really good thing for
I'm proud to bring forth this today.
Very good. Thank you for bringing that forward. If there's no additional comments or questions, I'll entertain a motion on this item.
Mr. Chair, I would move that the board approve resolution number 2017-362 authorizing district participation in CalPERS 457 Deferred Compensation Plan.
I'd be happy to second it.
Very good. There's a motion and there's a second. Roll call.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes.
Director
Hill?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Very good. Let's move on to item 6G. This is the annual review and update to the district board bylaws, and I believe legal counsel is going to present this item.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. The bylaws require an annual review by legal counsel in February of each year. It's a good housekeeping practice to update the bylaws annually. We keep track of changes that have been mentioned by staff or by board members throughout the year and recommendations or suggestions. There are a number of changes that are recommended this year. The first are grammatical improvements, which are self-explanatory. The second is a change to the language to section 2.4C to make it consistent with paragraphs 4.1 and 7.1 regarding whether the entire board wishes to consider an agenda item proposed at a meeting by an individual director. In looking at these provisions, you'll notice that there is a conflict between those provisions. So the additional language, we believe, would help eliminate that conflict. We're also recommending paragraph 5.7 be deleted regarding the retention of electronic records. This language is outdated. The district is in the process of developing a records retention policy, and any retention policy should not be in the bylaws, but in a separate document. We are also adding a new paragraph 6.9 regarding a censure procedure. It was brought to our attention by the board that the board did not have any process in place dealing with censure, so we've included language to address that concern. Finally, we are recommending the last sentence of paragraph 9.4 be deleted since it is obsolete. There is no personnel committee. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Trujillo. Any questions of staff? None?
Questions and or comments?
Okay. You want to go ahead?
Okay. First is just a typographical question. It looks like we're changing the he/she to lowercase she. And I take that to read if there's a male that it says he shall have the same rights, and if it's a female, she shall have the same rights, and in which case both would be capitalized, but that would be just a grammatical question, I guess.
Are you at 1.2?
That is, yes, 1.2.
He is capitalized because it's, isn't it the start of the sentence?
Yes.
So she would not be capitalized.
Okay. Keep going.
I'll shut up.
Well, no, you're fine. That's something that can staff just check the.
Just check the.
Yeah.
I have an issue with 2.4C. If requested by a director individually, the district administrator shall inquire whether a majority of the board wishes to entertain the item. With a three-member board, that appears to me to be putting us in Brown Act jeopardy. I would urge that we not adopt that for that reason.
If somebody asked each of us individually, it wouldn't be a Brown Act, but I'll shut up.
Yes, an individual director making the request would not be a violation. The 2.9 has the same typographical issues. We've deleted. The district shall keep and maintain the electronic recordings of district board meetings for a period of 365 days beyond the date that the minutes for any meetings are approved. I recall that some members of the public commented that existing recordings that were on our website previously had been removed, and I don't object to this taking effect in, say, 6 months or a year once people's had reasonable access to that if necessary. But I would urge that some delay mechanism be put into that, for example, 6 months. Then the censure portion, this is complaints should be made in writing forward to the district administrator. That looks like it puts the district administrator effectively in the middle of potentially a conflict between directors. I don't think that's necessarily a recipe for success. That again goes to the two board members placing something on the agenda, which is the second bullet point on 6.9. I have just a number of issues with that paragraph. Then 9.4, when approached by district personnel concerning specific district policy, directors should direct inquiries to the district administrator. Generally, I agree with that, but in a very small district, there may be effectively no other place to turn. Perhaps now that we're getting a HR consultant contract that may be taken care of. This is the board's personnel committee. Refer to the board's personnel committee for further consideration in accordance with district personnel policy. I don't know why we couldn't just strike the words personnel committee, and because it requires consideration in accordance with the district personnel policy, why that wouldn't be, you know, reasonable to do that. Um, 13, just a minor typo there by FPPC. There's an extra space. The board bylaws policy should be reviewed annually. The first regular meeting in February. Review should be provided by district legal counsel. Okay. And Mr. Trujillo has apparently provided this. So those are my comments.
Okay.
And or questions.
Karen, you have.
Well, I go back to 2.4C. It requested by director individually, the district administrator shall inquire whether a majority of the board wishes to entertain the item. If you ask the board members individually, it would not be, and you didn't tell each board member what the other board member wanted to do, it would not be a violation of the Brown Act, I don't believe.
Okay.
But it would be up to the district administrator to, I mean, it would be obvious if it went on the agenda.
Anything else? So legal counsel, I actually wrote a note on that, and, you know, maybe you can opine on that.
Certainly. Regarding section 2.4C, the language states that the district administrator shall inquire whether a majority of the board wishes to entertain the item. The only way that could happen is during a meeting when the majority of the board is together. So if an individual director were to ask the district administrator to add an item, he would then take it to the full board during an open meeting to get direction whether the board wishes to agendize it for a future meeting.
I'm not too sure that's real clear.
How does that work with the idea that we can't discuss items that are not on the agenda?
The Brown Act allows a brief discussion to put a matter on a future agenda. Otherwise, there'd never be any way to get direction from a board to put a matter on an agenda. So a very brief discussion, giving direction to staff to agendize an item, is not a Brown Act violation.
Okay. And then maybe further clarification on the 6.9, and I do appreciate you bringing this back, because I know we all recall the very difficult censor meeting, and we didn't have proper procedures in place. So I think this does address that. So maybe some clarifications on this. And I know that Director Hill had brought up some concerns, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to clarify.
Thank you. Regarding Section 6.9, we researched a number of different jurisdictions to see how they have handled this procedure. Again, this was a fairly common procedure for censure. There are, of course, a number of different ways that it can be accomplished, but this is the procedure we are recommending. With a small board, it's almost impossible not to involve the district administrator and to put the district administrator in the middle of it. I'm sure that's the last place he wants to be, and it's duly noted that that's not an ideal place, but I don't see any way around it when there's a censure issue involving a very small board.
Okay, very good. And then my question was, it would be, I do like the language under Section 2.4C, and thank you for clarifying, because that is, in fact, the way I took it to be, that it would have to be done in open session. So I'm just wondering, under agendas where it says Section 4.1, would it be benefit or useful or provide further clarification if we were to either reference back to that section or add language, that language to be consistent.
The whole purpose of adding the language to section 2.4 is to make it consistent, so there really is no need to cross-reference, okay, in our opinion.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Okay.
I'm also concerned, having prior experience on this board, of requesting items to be placed on agendas that were not placed on the agenda. And I think, for example, bifurcation of the former administrator's contract. And I'm really concerned about the... I think, if any, of doing away with minority discussion of minority positions on the board. So it seems to me that 2.4C change is not needed, and I think it's counterproductive.
Okay, very good. Let me open this up to the public. Is there any member of the community that would like to address this item?
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. And first, with the he versus she, I'd like it to read she, little he. So,
thank you,
I think
Julie.
They need to be treated equally. But go ahead, put the girls first. With regard to 2.4C, Mr. Hill brings up a very good point, and I was watching back then, and even more recently when Debbie Peterson was on the Sand District, she called for an audit numerous times. They agendized it. You are all equal. Agendize the discussion. If you choose to vote against it, then that's what that's for. But to not hear it at all and to not have the thorough vetting, each of your agencies brings forward different issues. So I think this is overly, I just think it's unnecessary. You are equals. Be heard as equals. If you choose to vote the other person down, then that's what you do. But you do it in public. So don't not hear it at all. So that's my thoughts on that one. Where I was noticing Section 3, the ethics training, and I wondered if it says designated that all of you should get ethics training. I think you probably get those in your respective agencies, but who are the designated district personnel and who is... sort of tracking that and making sure that's getting done. And maybe that's who should be called out in this item. Who are the designees? With regard to preparation of minutes and maintenance of tapes, if you take away the reference to tapes, then your heading is not about tapes anymore. I, too, was curious, and Mr. Scholes, you mentioned it at the last board meeting, where are the audio tapes from the previous website, and we'd like to see those come back. Mr. Hill has an interesting idea that they may be retained for another 6 months or so, so that everyone can have access to them one last time and download them or whatever they need to do. But I think, in light of the Wallace matter at the district attorney's office, I don't think any tapes, any records, anything should be destroyed until that's over. And certainly, as a practice, whatever does get destroyed comes back to your board in a format that you're watching or choosing what comes and goes. So your shredder should be really quiet over there and for a long time yet to come. I'm okay with adding censure language. I don't know that this is the best language, and I think that's all.
Is there anyone else?
Good evening. Chris Victorine, resident of Oceano. And I have some concerns about the censure grievance procedures. I do understand a small district and the complications that that causes, but I think it would be really difficult to have an objective judgment and independence while investigating someone who gives you direction. And I'm not sure of a way around that, if other districts do that. I mean, does the sanitation district have a code of conduct or a code of ethics that's published for the board of, the board, senior management, and, other sanitation employees?
Okay. Once you finish your comments.
Oh, okay. And if they don't, I looked. I couldn't find one. But okay. I'm not sure if there's one published, and it may not be public. But I would recommend developing those standards first for ethics and conduct before you put grievance procedures in place. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Amanda Rice, I'm from Cambria. As a former English teacher, capital S on the he, she. As a feminist, she, he. I just wanted to put that out there. And then I did have a question because being on a board, I was interested to read your bylaws and see how they differed from ours. And I'm looking at number 14, which is the evaluation of consultants. Does the legal counsel get evaluated during May and June? You do two evaluations, one in May and one in June? That's on number 14. I don't know if that's...
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good question.
Ron Arnoldson, I agree with Julie Tacker as far as the fact that each one of you is an individual that represents a individual group of people, and if you bring something to the board, you want it on the agenda, I think you should be recognized, it should be put on the agenda, it shouldn't be a big to-do. How often does it really happen? How many times has each one of you brought something before the group and wanted something on the agenda? So just do it, and then you can vote on it at that point. And in my occupation, 7 years is how long we keep our records, and I think that Julie's pretty much right on that. The fact that we're looking back and looking at things that happened back in the Wallace years, and we're trying to figure out what happened. It's nice to have those records. Don't jettison them that quickly.
Anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, let me bring it back to the board. Legal counsel, let's see. Let's deal with... We do have a code of conduct in this document. You want to cover that, or Gerhardt?
It's also state law.
Gil, you want to? You're pointing at me. I'm pointing at you. Give it a try, and I'll chime in.
Yes, I believe there is a section in the personnel policy manual, and I believe that's one of the sections that Alicia Lara was working on to make sure that it's up to date and consistent with state law.
Okay. And then I think the one speaker had brought up the question on number 14 regarding evaluations, and maybe we do need to reconcile that or clarify that, because it does say evaluation in, what does that say, May and June? So.
Yeah. Right. It could say May or June.
Okay.
I think that would clarify.
Easily. Okay. So, Karen, do you have anything else? Do you have anything on it?
No,
made comments and want to give you an opportunity.
No, but I wonder if these shouldn't not be approved tonight and maybe reconsider it a little bit.
Oh,
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of, I've got a lot of notes here on the sides of them.
All right. Well, then, I mean.
I mean, are you ready to approve them tonight as amended?
I mean, if you're uncomfortable moving forward,
no,
I think
no,
we're fine.
No, I'm just, I just asked if.
That's a good question.
If they shouldn't be brought back again. Because what did we decide to do on 2.4C? Okay.
So I think that's where we are, and let me give you some comments on that.
Yeah.
Nobody is saying, I support the language. No one's saying that we're going to silence any one of us, because we do all have basically a voice up here. I do know that we've had instances where we've got to just be clear that whatever work staff is doing is being done at the direction of the board majority. And I think this is where we're trying to get at, is that basically an item be brought, there's clarification of whether it is board majority, it be put on the agenda, and there be a vote. So tell me if I'm wrong or if I'm off the mark, and maybe we need to add more clarifying language. But I think in a small district with limited resources, we really have to find a way to balance workloads and get things done and be productive. And I think that's kind of where this appears to have been trying to go. So I'm fine with that. Like I said before, on the censure language, I think we all lived through the very awkward meeting. And it may not be perfect language, but I think it starts to address that issue. So I'm comfortable moving forward with what is presented here by staff, of course, with the changes, and I agree, make it capital she, capital he. I'm going to agree with you on that. But I do believe that the changes that are recommended are an improvement and does put us in a position to be successful going forward. I think Jim brought up a good point on the, what was that, 9.4. I don't know if we necessarily need to delete it rather than maybe a wordsmithing on that, because we do not have a personnel committee, but maybe there is a reference to the personnel policies, which staff is working very hard on now.
What?
So that was.
Okay, I'll shut up.
No.
Well, on 9.4, it says, you know, you directly inquire the district administrator, the chain of command should be followed. Well, if you go to a district administrator and you don't get in our policies for Oceano, then you go to a board member. And I would think that would be kind of implied there.
Legal counsel.
Thank you, Chair. Again, the change to 9.4 is to eliminate the reference to a personnel committee, because it doesn't exist and it creates all kinds of confusion. Yeah. And it is, I think the last comment by the director was that it was right on, is that we are required to follow the procedures in the district personnel policy manual. That goes without stating. I mean, it is a requirement by the manual. So I don't see a reason to have to add any language to it, but we certainly can.
Oh, okay.
I think that was my concern about the deletion there. I don't have a problem leaving that there if a director concludes that a personnel issue is not being adequately addressed in this manner. He/she should refer it to the board, just the board, for further consideration in accordance with the district personnel policy, which is the existing language.
Legal counsel, any legal issues with that suggestion?
There is, and it's because it references personnel issues, and we would be prohibited because of the confidentiality that goes along with personnel issues from bringing that to the board in an open session. So, again, it's really the intention was just to eliminate the personnel committee, and I think that the suggested change does do that without adding any additional confusion.
Okay. So as the chair, I normally do not make motions, but if it helps move us along, I'm going to try a motion tonight. And I'm going to move that we approve amendments to the district's bylaws as proposed in attachment one, with corrections to grammatical items, changing, I think it says she / capital he, and I think that was the only other thing. We make sure we clean up any grammatical items.
I'll second it as amended.
Okay. Any additional discussion?
I cannot support item 2.4C as it's indicated here.
Okay. Let's do a roll call.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes.
Director Hill?
No.
Director White?
Yes.
Okay, let's move on to item 6H. Mr. Huebner?
Thank you, Chair Schultz, directors, members of the public, Gerhard Huebner. This is item 6H. And with this item, we're going to present our district's brine disposal program and also discuss a bit about the Cambria Community Service District application for a brine waste disposal permit. Let's just jump in and I'm not sure when the last time the board has got an update on its brine disposal program. Of course, we do describe it briefly in our annual report. You'll see some reference to that later in some of my slides. So if you weren't aware, we own and operate a brine disposal station utilized by a variety of local water softening companies, water purveyors, vineyards, and one local community service district, that's Los Osos, for disposal of brine. This brine disposal program has been in existence for many years, records I've seen, perhaps as early as 2004. The program provides, and this is an important thing to remember, because I do feel it is important to remind you, that it provides a local and regional public service for disposal of salt brine for San Luis Obispo County and beyond. So it's a regional asset. So, we have a program, we have a permit application. So in order for a permittee or discharger of brine to truck and dispose of brine at the district facilities, the permittee must submit a complete application and fee, deposit or bond of $10,000, and provide a laboratory analysis of the proposed brine to be disposed of. So I'm not going to go through all of these. I've highlighted a few just to kind of give you an idea of the permit conditions that are required for disposal of brine. It's a privilege, not a right. It's our program, so permit suspension can occur at the discretion of the district or a violation of the permit requirements. It is an annual review. They have to renew it annually. We do have a volumetric limitation of 50,000 gallons per day. The discharges above this limitation are not allowed. It is a first come basis. There's no guarantee of the discharge once the daily limitation is reached. So no expectation that once they arrive at our gate, if the limitation has been breached, that's too bad. They can't cause us to exceed our permit limitations. We monitor that by submittal of monthly reports from an ELAP. So it's California certified ELAP laboratory for discharge of brine samples. And the permittee must provide a dedicated delivery vehicle. So a whole bunch of conditions that must be met. They're all specified in the permit, and the permittee must acknowledge that in order to receive their permit. So already kind of jumped ahead. They meet and acknowledge all the above conditions. The permittee is enrolled under our district brine disposal program. The permit is issued by the district administrator, and no further action by the board is needed or required. So what I call this is essentially it's a ministerial action. The program was established. It's under the umbrella of the MPDS permit or the discharge permit from the regional board. And if they meet all the criteria, essentially it's a ministerial action. Pay your fee, your application, and provide laboratory analysis. So how do we administer the program? Well, a logbook is maintained records the date, time, and place of the truckload that brings the brine in. The log describes the volume of the waste, owner of the truckload, source of the truckload,
where did it come from or the type. Before the truck unloads, sample is grabbed and the pH is analyzed. Once our district laboratory technician determines compliance, the station is unlocked. Brine truck is allowed then to discharge brine into our system. Subsequently, then, the brine is mixed with the district's treated effluent and both discharged together into the ocean through our outfall. We also keep a sample from each truckload for 14 days in case there's an identified problem with the brine, so after the fact, we can verify. This is a statistic out of our annual report. We received 626 truckloads of brine, totaling slightly over 2.6 million gallons. We currently have 12 brine generators permittees enrolled in the brine disposal program. Six are active. So you see half of them basically sign up yearly. They pay their 500 fee, kind of like a placeholder. And whether they avail themselves or not, it's up to them. So, as you recall, at a past board meeting, the board directed staff when the brine disposal application would be received from Cambria CSD that the board would be notified. The staff report is providing you that notification. Recently, we did receive a signed application for brine disposal, the fee and deposit for the discharge of brine from their groundwater desalter treatment facility. They also provided a laboratory analysis of the proposed brine. In their application, they stated a maximum daily volume of 21,060 gallons per day from their facility. So subsequently, staff reviewed the application, looked at the laboratory analysis, and indicated that the application is complete and meets the requirements of the district's brine disposal program. Thus, they're eligible for one of our brine waste disposal permits. So put a little bit of historical context of what happens and was there volume or capacity at the district. We did do an analysis, charted out that within the 50,000 gallon per day limitation, whether we could accommodate that. We do see that there is sufficient capacity. For example, brine daily volumes received can be from zero. Some days we've received none. To a maximum of 32,800 gallons per day, and that was one day in January 2016. Again, most days we receive less than 10,000 gallons per day. This past January, however, we did have one permittee who brought in significant brine to our facility, and that highest day was combined was 45,600 gallons per day. In any event, in no time that I could see in the entire calendar 16 that we ever exceeded our 50,000 gallons per day limitation. Just to put a little bit of context. Day zero, some days quite a bit, depending on the facilities, what they're doing. The rains, I understand, affected one particular operator. That's why they brought in sufficient or significant amount of brine, and that's what brought up the volumetric per gallon per day. So, in addition, we would require Cambria CSD trucks to access our facility from the back end entrance, avoiding disruption to the adjacent Oceano community, so we are sensitive to that. Since the district permittees must renew annually, no brine permittee, including Cambria, are guaranteeing brine disposal at our facility beyond what our program allows. So, again, there's no guarantee. Brought up that this would jeopardize a future reclamation or recycling project by the district or one of its member agencies. Again, it's an annual program and a program that we can suspend. It's subject to regional board changes, so when our permit is renewed or we go for a reclamation project, of course, the brine disposal program would be subject to change as well. So no guarantees. But for all the reasons I just stated above, it is our intent to issue a brine waste disposal to Cambria as we would anybody else. So this is an important concept in that they're not singled out. They're no different than anybody else. They would be subject to the same permit conditions that we would require if anybody walked in, whether the community service district, water purveyor, or a water softening company. This is my last slide.
just a little bit of reminder of what the brine disposal program provides. It provides approximately $300,000 annually as revenue, not an insignificant amount. Currently, we charge, I'll just say 11 cents a gallon. That's the more correct number. We actually looked it up this afternoon. There was a resolution that your board passed. It says 11 cents per gallon. So what do you want to do? The math on the 112.50, it's 11 cents. Just put a number here. If you were to calculate what 11 cents per gallon in the monthly, you roughly get $46,332. But again, you got to understand that's not guaranteed. Seasonally change, monthly change, daily change, but just get you an idea of the type of revenue that might be realized if they utilize or they bring the volume that they've put on their application. And then finally, these are kind of interesting points that, and why I'm actually was interested in bringing this discussion about our whole brine disposal program is the board may want to consider, you know, is our current brine per gallon fee adequate? Is it represents, as I mentioned, this is a regional asset, or this is an asset that the district owns, but it provides regional salinity management options for the South Slope County area. You may want to look and adjust it at some point. Or look at a tiered charge or fee system or another volumetric limit for haulers outside the county for those versus within the county. So should perhaps the county residents or the South County residents or our member agencies have priority if it comes to a point where we have limited capacity versus those that bring brine from outside of the county. So those are policy issues, not be decided tonight, but I wanted to kind of seed that thought in your process when you think about this overall program. So with that, be happy to answer your questions.
Okay, thank you for that report. Any questions? Let me go with Karen.
I have one kind of maybe stupid one, but how do you get to the district's facility from our back facility entrance without going through Oceana?
Well, you'd still have to go through Oceana, but you wouldn't come up over the bridge into the residential area to the front entrance. We do have the ability through, thank you, Amy.
It's in the industrial area.
Thank you, John.
Okay. Hold on, John. You want to come up to the podium?
John, why don't you come?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry for breaking in, but I just wanted to be clear. What we've done already, we've already started directing the trucks because we do have a large, so we're already directing the trucks through the back entrance because that's an industrial area. And the concern here was that the front gate is a gate for it goes right through a neighborhood where people are sleeping, walking their dogs and all that, and that back area is simply an industrial area where you have businesses and factories and things like that. So that's
what street do you come in on then?
I don't know the name of the exact street, but you come off the Highway 1, you turn right there by Rock and Roll Cafe, and you can go around around that way. I'd have to look up the street names. I'm not that familiar, but it is totally industrial. They don't go by any homes. They're kind of,
I just remember some of the warehouses areas where the packing.
Do you go over the bridge to the island, or do you?
No, you can turn in before that, or there is an area around the back way around over the bridge and down into the city by 13th or whatever, and you come back around.
Yeah.
They have one street that kind of crosses the highway, Cattle Corner.
Yeah.
Going towards the where the post office is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
Just let us know. We'll bring you up so I can get you on the record, okay? Karen, anything else?
No.
Jim?
No.
Okay. And I did want the record to show we did get an email from Tina Dickinson, and I believe Tina had raised a question as to the cost. It seems like you would address.
Yes, we were able to clarify that we actually found the resolution where it's 11 cents.
Okay, very good.
Per gallon.
So let me open this up to the community if there's anyone who would like to address this item.
Brad Snook, co-chair of our county's chapter Surfrider Foundation. First of all, the reason that Cambria is moving their brine here is because nobody else will take it. And you look at what that is a pollutant So you're adding pollutant to the ocean through the district's ocean outfall. I hope the district takes it very seriously, the pollutants that they add to the ocean, whether it be any process. Now, getting on to processes in the Cambria CSD, they have not locked down what's going on with their desalination plant. Very much up in the air as far as their process of separating the salts. Their desalination pond is a mess. It's now flooded. They are facing notices of violation, substantial notices of violation. It looks like their process is not locked down by any stretch of the imagination. And I was wondering if the district administrator has any more information about how that effluent from the desal plant is tested for more damaging materials besides brine. Are there heavy metals that can be detected? How long does it take for those to be detected? Perhaps the district is putting themselves in a liability condition if they allow those other materials that they aren't allowed to discharge per the permit, because of something that has been put through a unregulated, unmitigated, uncertified desalination plant. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Snook. Is there anyone else?
Julie Tacker again, and I want to thank Tina Dickinson for catching the mathematical errors. I'd be curious, since you looked up the 11-cent price, because I already knew it, because I was at the board meeting where they did it, but I don't recall the date, but I can't imagine. I'm sure on the resolution there was a date, and you mentioned that you don't know how long ago it had been. Well, it's on that resolution that you looked at today. So I'm thinking in the last 3 years, John?
Probably, Julie, 10.
Sorry, 3 years or less. And I'd like to know, because as I understand, your outfall is shared with Pismo. And where in this does the Pismo have some capacity, and what say do they have in the 50,000 gallons? Is it 25,000 for Sand District and 25,000 for Pismo daily? And when I talked about the recycled water projects in the past and how this may have impacts to how much brine you can discharge, I was referencing Pismo, and originally they were going to go alone, and they were going to add more from their side. They were going to send very salty water out, which then would reduce your ability to add your salts from your recycled processes. So I think Pismo should be part of this discussion, because this is a big discharger. What's not here is the CEQA analysis for a volume like this with the traffic like this. My recollection of the EIR up in Cambria is that the more thorough analysis was trucks to Kettleman, but not really analyzing truck trips to Oceano. Going through larger cities, there may be a difference, but I don't see that spelled out in their document. Certainly not in your document for your redundancy project. When you had a traffic analysis done for that project, what construction traffic is there was never contemplated to be conflicting with perhaps this amount of trucks. Mr. Huebner suggests that this process is ministerial. I suggest this is discretionary. And what isn't happening tonight, he's not asking your board for approval. He's notifying you that the process is going on. I think you have the authority to approve or deny this discharger. And that's not before you. And I think you should bring it back and have that discussion. He later speaks to maybe changing the way the charges are administered, maybe raising the price, maybe tiering the price. You are an enterprise fund district. You can only charge what it costs to process this material. I know you don't process anything. You're just dumping it out your outfall. So that's why the price is very low already. The idea that San Luis County dischargers are maybe priority over Santa Maria or Santa Barbara County, they're closer than Cambria, for example. So you have to look at a larger picture, and that you don't want trucks driving long, long distances, whether they're in the county or out of the county,
right,
to use your facility.
Anyone else?
Mary, this is Yoshiano. I would caution you on pulling one potential vendor out and scrutinizing them differently than other vendors who access the sanitation line. I want to go back to the impact on the neighborhood. Whether you decide to do this with Cambria or not, I'm not vested in that discussion. What I'm invested is in the environment around it. So the road, the south end of the airport is Clifton, and that goes up onto the levee, and the only two people who have keys to that gate is the Guyton family and Public Works and the Fire Authority. So I don't understand where you're driving these trucks in, because I've actually had two people talk to me this week about the increase in trucks, and that now the trucks that are, they come in on Lakeside, mm-hmm, and they're literally rattling people's dishes on their shelves and stuff. So they have asked me to kind of figure out why there's been an increase in the trucks. And if there's a back road to the sand district, why haven't we always brought those trucks through that area? Also, too, is it's going across a little wooden bridge. And that bridge was, I don't think it was particularly made for big trucks to come barreling down it multiple times a day. You know, so that starts to cost, okay, the people of Oceano money. So if you could talk to me a little bit about where this back door is, because I do live right there, you know, and so the only place I could figure out that you would have another driveway would be down off of Housian and Highway 1, you know, by the propane tanks, which you're still going to have to get up on the levee. So I'm lost about this mystery driveway, but I don't have an opinion on singling out vendors.
Okay, is there anyone else?
Amanda Rice, Cambria CSD Board President, and I just wanted to address some of the concerns that were raised by the public here. I know that our general manager, and I don't want to get into operational issues, but I feel like they can't go unanswered. We are not unregulated, as the notices of violation show. We are not unmitigated, as anybody who can look at the operations manual of our plant, it already is implementing the things in the subsequent EIR that we are preparing and hopefully will be able to certify in April. The amount of testing that's done on the constituents and the brine is not necessarily excessive, but it is a large amount, and we had to submit, and I assume that we will have to periodically submit what our test results are. And we do, we're having to budget almost $130,000 next year for lab tests for the brine pond and the advanced water treatment facility alone. The brine pond is supposed to be a temporary measure because, if you didn't know, this is an emergency project that was put in under an emergency. We will have to figure out what we're going to do with the brine for the long term. But I think the district as a whole is grateful to find a place. This isn't the only place we could have gone. This is the place we preferred to come. Wish we could do something closer, but this is closer than Kettleman City. So, and with the report that Mr. Huebner presented, it's a regional facility. I drove down here. It's not too far to drive. So it may be not as close as Santa Barbara, but if this is a regional facility, this would be one way to show it, and we could use the help. Thanks.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else?
Ron Arnelson. I would caution you to maybe take a look at this, maybe table it, and look at the things that are going to happen to the communities around here with as the increased truck traffic. If you'll remember, there was a big to-do over the increased rail traffic. Of course, those oil tankers were a lot more caustic than saline, but there was still a concern about the increase of air pollution and et cetera, through the corridor. And you're dealing with two communities, too. You're not just dealing with Oceano. You're dealing with Grover Beach, because they're basically, these trucks are going to come through Grover Beach. They're going to get off of the freeway, come through Grover Beach. So a couple of you, that not Jim, but the other two of you, may want to go back to your constituents and find out if there is a concern in your communities about increased truck traffic, not only the pollution that they may cause, but these trucks are heavy. They're going to cause a lot more traffic on some streets that are already in need of repair, especially in Grover Beach and Oceano. And so you may be gaining some money in one district, the sanitation district, but you may be maybe putting funds into costing other districts money repair-wise, streets and things like that, and you might have some constituents that are a little upset over the air pollution that's, you know, that maybe the change in traffic and the change in maybe some pollution via truck traffic.
Is there anyone else? Let me close it and bring it back to the board. Mr. Huebner?
Just a few clarifying comments. I want to address Mr. Schnook's comments about ocean discharge and still here? Oh, yeah, there you are. I want to assure you, as a person that worked a substantial amount of my career at the regional board, water quality is always on the top of my head thinking about it. I've looked at the analysis. It does include heavy metals constituents. We asked for recent sampling. We received those results. We asked even some things that beyond in terms of some of the operational parameters that we encounter at the sand district, even though it doesn't go through our treatment plant. So the salinity is actually very, very low that they're proposing, not typically what you would see, like a hyper brine or other type of brine that would be received. So I did look at those carefully with the, of course, district's operations in mind, our permit in mind, and they're very, very low constituents or non-detect in many cases.
Okay. And then I think sort of the question was on testing for other materials. Is, can you maybe speak to that?
Well, we certainly have our parameters that our permit requires, which are metals, chloride. I actually have my folder on the other side there, so I'm going off a little bit off the top of my head. And they provided some constituents and analysis that went slightly beyond that. Certainly, I think we have discretion if there's something else. I would be cautious of singling them out unless there's specific reason, just like we wouldn't want the regional board through our permit to be sampling for constituents that are not in domestic sewage, which would incur costs, and those would be comments that I would put back to them. You certainly don't want to single somebody out unless there's what they call a reasonable potential that those constituents, those pollutants, would be represented in their effluent or their brine. So it's a balancing act. So.
Okay. And then can you, John, I'm getting to some questions. Okay. Increased truck traffic. I know that was brought up by a couple of folks. Can you speak to that issue on truck traffic and the environmental?
Well, I know Cambria has done their environmental review. They looked at alternatives. That's separate. We don't have that as part of our application. I mean, we could have somebody else come in with an application tomorrow. We wouldn't have them analyze additional truck traffic or you're looking at a level of analysis that we haven't required or haven't undertaken. Maybe someday we will. Maybe the program will disappear at some point. But at this point, the way we've tried to minimize it on the community is to utilize our back entrance. And we'll certainly get some more information on access and be working with John in terms of keys or what that, and we can talk with Mary and provide, of course, the public where that is. So that was our attempt to minimize disruption of additional truck traffic.
Okay. And then the question regarding Pismo Beach's capacity, I know this is seems like a short-term solution, but, you know, is there, do we have any information on that? Would this impact our future reclamation efforts?
I don't see it. I looked at Pismo's permit today, and they don't have a brine disposal program. I mean, they have their own ability and their own permit to discharge out the outfall. They have to meet their own requirements. I mean, really, where it just intersects with the sand district is we share an outfall. So their independent operations, treatment, and their effluent limitations, they meet with ours to the degree that actually that they have better quality. We benefit, the environment benefits with the combined outfall, including the brine that goes with it.
Okay. And John, did you have something that you wanted to add?
Yeah, for Mr. Schnook, I just kind of wanted to, we do test for 12 ocean metals for the ocean metal plant. We require three samples prior to them bringing anything to the plant in the first place, and then we require them to bring those samples, they sample once a month on their own, and then the district is to go out and sample a couple of times. So it's a thorough sampling process. It's maintained monthly. But as an extra measure of security, when the brine is brought to the plant, we collect a sample from each and every truck that comes to the plant, and we keep that sample for at least 15 days so that if there is an occurrence, we can go back and double-check and triple-check what we've received over the last couple of weeks. So there's a really thorough testing and collections process in place to ensure. One more thing that we monitor for pH, and we monitor for conductivity with each sample. That's automatic monitoring. But if something else triggers, then we can always go back and pull a sample from each truck. We keep it. We identify each truck, the time it arrives, and where it came from, so that if something triggers a suspicion from us, then we can pull that sample, send it to the lab for either further testing. So it's. Our program is pretty in-depth with regard to testing and keeping track of who brings what and what they bring to us. One more measure we use is clarity. If it doesn't meet a certain clarity, then we will not accept it. Another important fact is that at any point in time, we can refuse a truck, and we do it, and Ms. Mui is pretty thorough about that. If they bring something that doesn't have the right pH, that doesn't have the right clarity, then at that time and moment, we reject it. So just because we sign these contracts and these agreements doesn't mean we have to allow them in without regard, and they're tested pretty regularly. And then with regard to the back gate, we do have a lock on that back gate. That's the district's lock. What we've done is we've given that combination to the dispatchers for the different trucking agencies. And as the trucks come to the gate, they open the lock. The county has a lock. We have a lock. I'm not sure who else has a lock. But the back gate coming into the county road is a gate which we have a lock to, along with the county, along with Oceano. And with regard to the bridge, I think we can check with the county. The county maintains that bridge. So okay. If there's an issue with the bridge, then we have to go to the county with it.
Very good. And I think you had pointed out about not having to accept the trucks, correct?
Correct. If you look at the list of things, and John mentioned a few, we own this program. We monitor it. First and foremost, we're going to make sure that the district stays in compliance with its permits, so we're not going to take a chance. We'll certainly work with the regional board if there's additional sampling protocols or things of that that'll make the program even better. We're, of course, open to those kind of discussions.
Okay, very good. This is a receive and file report, so we will consider it filed. I think that concludes that item. And I wanted to see, Mr. Huberner or legal counsel, was there anything else?
Thank you, Chair Schultz. I do have one additional business item. I was contacted today by the City of Arroyo Grande requesting that we present to the board a request whether or not this board wishes to join in a joint investigation that they are conducting regarding an alleged Brown Act violation and whether or not this board wishes to share costs. It's not agendized for tonight, so we are asking that if you're interested, you direct staff to place it on the next regular agenda or a special meeting.
Okay. Karen, you have anything?
No.
Okay. So this is, I guess, a little awkward. So basically, the City of Arroyo Grande has asked us to consider it. This is not on an agenda to take action. So basically, if there's a board majority saying, let's put this on an agenda, that's the direction that staff is seeking. Is that?
Yes.
Future agenda.
Okay. Yeah, I think, obviously, as a courtesy to Arroyo Grande, I haven't followed a whole lot of this, to tell you the truth, but I do think that we probably should put the suns on the agenda for future discussion. No decisions have been made, and let's not jump to conclusions, but I think we have a responsibility to at least to have a discussion around it.
I would support that.
Okay. And so I don't know if there's a need for a special meeting. I mean, don't think there's any urgency. We have, when is our next meeting?
Our next meeting is March 1st.
Okay.
2 weeks.
I would agree with you. Meetings are expensive.
All right. So I think with that, is there anything else, staff? Okay.
I will just, I was going to send the board an announcement. I'm going to let the public know, too. We did receive files back today from the district attorneys, so we've received all of them back. Actually, I requested because I needed to find one in particular. So they delivered them. They're in our C-train. That's it.
Okay. Very good. If there's any board member comments or anything? Okay, seeing no comments, we are adjourned.